You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
So not a whole lot of news being made in early February. It's time for us to test our beat writers with some more off-the-wall questions this week in the American League West. Every time we think that Jerry DePoto has got to be just about done, he's made approximately two-thirds of all Major League Baseball's offseason moves. He makes another one, and now he's picking up Korean slugging first baseman. Tell us what you know about Daeho Lee.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You know, Jerry doesn't seem to sleep a whole lot, and he's got his international connections, obviously. So kind of an interesting signing, a minor league deal, so they're not putting a lot out on risk out here, but bringing in a guy, Daeho Lee, who's a big dude. He's about 6'4", about 280, and hits the ball a long way, I'm told. Haven't seen him. Played in Korea for about 10 years and then in Japan the last four. But big guy who hit 31 homers last year and 98 RBIs in Japan for SoftBank. So got a pretty good track record over there, and they're going to bring him over here and see how he fits in. They're kind of looking for that right-handed complement to Adam Lind at first base and Jesus Montero, kind of the leader in the clubhouse. And they brought in Gabby Sanchez also on a minor league deal, and now Daeho Lee to also give it a shot. So just kind of building depth there and some options and see what they can come up with, Dave. It should be interesting to see what he brings to camp.
Well, I remember when the Cubs were heavily invested in Aesop Choi, and I covered him for a number of years. Recently got, able to become familiar with Shin-Soo Chu, who I guess he went to elementary school with Daeho Lee, right?
That's what I've heard, yeah, that they grew up together. So interesting connection.
Yeah, well, if he turns out anything like Chu, then of course Jerry DePoto is a genius, which he may be anyway. But interesting stuff. Let's explore the rest of this roster. So, typically we think of this as sort of a slow time of year. There is no such thing these days under DePoto, but I think of it as a good time to ask those really hard hitting questions. Things that we really need to know, like. Like who on this team might be the one to come up to the plate to Justin Bieber? let's get into it, Greg.
Is there any believers on the Mariners? Is the question?
That's exactly right.
that's a tough question. If you're coming out swinging, I don't believe there are any believers on the Mariners, so that's a tough one to say. Who would come up to the plate with the Bieber walk-up music? If I had the gun in my head, I guess I would go young. I think you got to go young on that one. And the Mariners have a pretty mature lineup. Nobody under 28 starting this next year except Ketel Marte. So I'm going to go with a guy, and I think the correct answer here, Dave, is no one. But I'm going to go with Ketel Marte. For one big reason here, Kettle is a Latino kid who doesn't speak a lot of English, and he's probably not going to listen to this podcast, so he's not going to know I'm sticking him with Justin Bieber. But that's my guess. 23-year-old Ketel Marte is going to be the believer on the Mariners.
Hey, so to this end, right? And I can't remember exactly when it all started. The guys would pick out music and come up to that music and all this sort of nonsense. What is the sort of the silliest, weirdest song you can think of that a guy's come up to, if you can? I'm not kind of putting you on the spot right now. But for that matter,
you are.
What would be your walk-up music?
I'm like the worst guy to ask. I don't mean to dodge this question. I don't know.
I know it wouldn't be Billy Joel.
A lot of it. I'll go Billy Joel Piano Man, I think, because who else would it be? Because, he's going to be in Safeco Field. Yeah, I'm a horrible person for walk-up music. Some people pay a lot of attention to that. I don't know whether it's because I'm taking notes or updating my scorebook. I couldn't tell you one guy that what he plays. So, give me the Piano Man, and we'll go out with Billy there on Safeco, just like it's going to be when he shows up for the concert. How's that?
It works just fine. That works just fine. I'm with you, though. I know it's happening. I hear it, I guess, sort of.
Right.
But I really never pay attention or think to myself, oh, he's coming up to whomever. It just doesn't cross my mind.
It's not big on my mind. I know a lot of people do pay attention, and I'm that's probably not my strong point. I'm going to be frank with you.
All right. Well, you gloves down. I mean, you've held them for the 8 seconds. We're going to keep the fight going. Let's go the other end of that spectrum with you. Who's got that personality on this team, you know, that kind of feisty guy who might be the first to be ejected?
First guy to be ejected. Again, the leader in the clubhouse, I think, on recent history would be Kyle Seager, because I don't know if you remember, he had a little dust-up with Jared Weaver at the end of last year, and Weaver wanted to kind of quick-pitch him, and Seager was not having anything to do with it, and he kind of goes through his routine and held up his hand, and they exchanged some words, and some interesting, you know, I think if you want to look forward to next year, the Angels and Mariners, you know, the Mariners getting a lot of front office guys from the Angels, their manager and the GM, and Seager with the little thing. It might be a little bad blood between the Angels and Mariners next year. Seager, however, he's a pretty controlled guy. So, you know, I give you all that, and then I'm going to say, first guy to get ejected, I'll go Felix Hernandez, just because, you know, he's a guy who sometimes will bark at the umps and actually would get ejected, where I think Seager, you know, more controlled. So Mariners, not a team that gets in a lot of fights and gets guys thrown out a lot. So that's right up there with walk-up music. But I'll go with Felix. This guy's get tossed.
No believers. No ejections. This is telling, and I don't know, Greg. Maybe this is more, you know, introspective on you than it is the team. I don't know. We're going to find out.
That well could be.
Let's see. How about this? Somebody off the bench. You know, one of the bench guys who you could see jumping into the lineup on an everyday basis at some point. Who might be that first candidate in your mind?
First candidate to come out, yeah, I'm going to go with a guy probably not a lot of people would say right now. I would go with Mike Zunino, who I don't think is going to be on the club to break camp, because I think they're darn well set to start him in AAA. They really feel like he got pushed too quick and just didn't have enough minor league at-bats and need some time in Tacoma, and I think they're going to do everything they can to make that happen, and brought in Chris Iannetta and Steve Clevenger to kind of be those guys. But I think Mike Zunino is a pretty darn talented kid, and I think when he just relaxes and plays his game, I think he's going to be sitting down there in Tacoma hitting the heck out of the ball. And catchers, you know, tend to get hurt, and you go through them. I could see Zunino getting a call up at some point earlier than probably the Mariners think. You know, that would be my guess. So, you know, he's a guy I think he might just force his way back into that picture.
T.R., you know, I normally think of this time of year, that the very beginning of February, is that real lull, that downtime as everybody packs up, gets ready to head to spring training. Of course, it's been a lull for a little while now, it seems like, for the Rangers. This has been a somewhat quiet offseason.
Well, Dave, I think they've made their moves and they've hit their budget, so I think that anything that comes down, and there could be a signing or two as they go down to spring training. There's still a lot of free agents out there who might take a minor league contract, so I think you might see something like that. But I think for the most part, they got the team that they're going to take to spring training.
Well, with that in mind, we were kind of going around some ideas this week, thinking of what we might talk about. So we're going to pose some questions to you. Some of them might seem straightforward, some of them a little off the wall. Let's start with the pitching, and let's identify that guy. And I think there are several on this team that could pull this off. But who's the most likely in your mind to maybe put up that no-hitter or perfect game this summer?
Well, David, we've seen in the past, Yu Darvish has come close to a no-hitter on occasion. One time he was one out away from, I think, a perfect game in Houston. Of course, he's not going to be back till mid-May or late May, and who knows what kind of level he'll be at when he does get back into the rotation. You know, Cole Hamels threw a no-hitter last year right before getting traded to the Rangers, so maybe he has one in him again this year.
Okay. Well, the other thing about a rotation, TR, is that you never start the season with five and use only those five for the full year. Somebody is usually going to go down, lose their spot, whatever the case. Who's the first starting pitcher you feel that will bow out of this rotation?
Well, we have a battle for the fifth spot between Nick Martinez, Chichi Gonzalez, Anthony Renato, and A.J. Griffin, and presumably if everybody stays healthy, one of those will start the season in the rotation, and then, well, again, comes mid-May, here comes Yu Darvish, and I think the winner of that would be the first one out. You got, you know, Cole Hamels not going anywhere. Derek Holland and Martin Perez, the Rangers are hoping, will be ready to go every fifth day. So I think you got to say that that fifth starter spot looks pretty tenuous right now.
Yeah. Okay. On the other side of that, off the bench, you know, we teams are really good at utilizing all their talent and spreading the innings and the bats around a little bit. But somebody will probably emerge and take over a starting position in the lineup. Who off this bench do you feel is the leading candidate to do that first?
Well, Robinson Chirinos goes into spring training as the Rangers starting catcher, but they got Chris Jimenez back, and they signed Michael McKendry, a guy who's caught regularly for the Pirates on occasion. So I think there's always a possibility that, you know, a guy like Michael McKendry could, you know, push past Robinson Chirinos and become the regular catcher. So I think if there's a there's two interesting spots. One is catcher, the other is second base. You certainly think Neto Odor is poised for a big year, but you know, if he slips again, you know, you could see Hanser Alberto slipping at second base.
Interesting. I didn't see that one coming, TR.
Well, Alberto is a great defensive player who's just had a tremendous offseason. He led the Dominican Republic Winter League in hitting. So this kid's coming to spring training on a mission.
Yeah. But I think like you said, and I'm on board with this too, I think so many people really expect that a big breakthrough type year for Rugned. But I'm with you. Nothing off the table here. Let's get to the important stuff, TR. Who on this team is going to change their walk-up music to Justin Bieber?
I think Adrian Beltre will, because I think what will happen was Elvis Andrus will bribe Chuck Morgan, the PA announcer, into playing Justin Bieber music when Beltre walks up, just to annoy Beltre. So I would say it's him.
So not by his own choice, but by some sort of nefarious dealing behind the scenes.
Andrus is famous for his nefarious dealings.
All right. Well done. Other end of that spectrum, though, is you know, the fiery personality, that guy who might be, you know, getting a little brouhaha with an umpire and the first to be ejected on the team.
Wow. This is not the most volatile team. They're all pretty low key. Wow, that's a tough one, because obviously the manager's the leading candidate. But Beltre, no, I can't say Beltre. Andrus will probably do something dumb and get kicked out of the game. I think he's done that before.
that's a good answer. I like the fact that you had to struggle for it too, because that means it was the right question. What about, you know, again, offensively, we talked about no hitters, perfect games on a pitching staff. Who might be a candidate to hit for the cycle on this team?
I'm ready, Dave. We're almost there. Less than 2 weeks away now, and offseason has flown by as usual.
Yes, yeah. You know, it's amazing how that always seems to happen. Meanwhile, the Angels still, you know, obviously every team's going to have some questions going into spring training. One of them for the Angels will be, who's going to be the, you know, in that setup role this year? Maybe, you know, you figure Street closing things off, you know, Smith in there as well. But how do you see that back in the bullpen lining up?
You know, Dave, it's going to be really interesting. I think, you know, the Angels go into spring training with a lot of questions. And I think one of their questions is going to be in the bullpen because, you know, one good thing about the way that it's set up for them in their bullpen is that they do have an established closer in Houston Street, and they have an established setup man in Joe Smith. A lot of teams can't say that they have both of those innings taken care of. The question with the Angels, I think, is going to be who steps into that seventh inning role. And I know it's not really a glamorous role at all, but if you look throughout baseball these last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years maybe, so the best bullpens all had three trusted relievers that they could go to. They had a seventh inning guy, an eighth inning guy, and then the closer. And the Angels bullpen, when it was at its best recently, was down the stretch in that 2014 season when they got Houston Street at the trade deadline, and then Kevin Jepson was able to slide into that seventh inning role. They became a real, they became a legit force down the stretch, closing out games, holding leads. And now for the Angels going into the year, it's going to be really interesting to see if anybody really emerges in that role. I'm sure that Mike Socha is going to go into the year kind of mixing and matching. Maybe he'll use lefty, left-on-left matchups and stuff like that. But I think ideally somebody would really step up and he'd just settle on one guy. And, you know, who that guy is, though, remains to be seen. They got Al Albuquerque from the Tigers. He throws really hard, but he also walks a lot of guys, and he's coming off a down year. Mike Morin seems to be a guy that a lot of people in the organization feel could really step into that role because he showed so much as a rookie in 2014. And then in 2015, he just wasn't right. Some people believe that maybe he had some pain in his arm early in the year. He went on the DL for a while with an oblique injury. But he's a guy who's got great command of a changeup, mixes it up with a fastball, and you know, he's kind of got the makeup to pitch late in game. So they're hoping that he could kind of recapture what he had a couple years ago because he's only 24 years old. And then, you know, beyond that, you know, they still got a bunch of guys that they'd like to see some more out of. Fernando Salas is a veteran, Corey Rasmus, Jose Alvarez, and Cam Bedrosian, their young reliever who they're still waiting to see if he can kind of harness the stuff that he has. But, you know, there's a lot of candidates there. And they need to settle one because, Dave, as you remember, they traded Trevor Gott to the Nationals to get Yunel Escobar. Trevor Gott was the guy who became that seventh-inning reliever last year, and now he's gone.
Yeah, and, you know, when you talk about auditioning that many guys for a spot, it's tough in spring training, right, finding the innings to give these guys that look, at least those innings where, you know, you want to see them know, as close to that role as you can or in some way replicating some of what they're going to have to do. I just think spring training is such a tough time to really evaluate guys. And yet, you know, that's clearly what Ocean Company are going to have to do.
Yeah, you make a great point, Dave, because especially for the bullpen, because, you know, when a closer comes in the ninth inning, well, in spring training, the ninth inning needs, you're facing off against a bunch of guys who are not going to make the team, who are going to go to minor league camp in a week or two and who are still prospects, who are still young. And, you know, obviously the intensity is nowhere near what it is during the regular season. So, I mean, you're right. It's hard to see what guys will do when the lights come on, especially for the Angels, I think, for young guys. Guys who are still developing like Mike Morin and Corey Rasmus and Cam Bedrosian.
Yeah, but good to have that depth, though. Good to have some guys to choose from, and hopefully they'll be able to get at least a portion of that answer at spring training, which is, as we mentioned, right around the corner. Of course, you don't need a bullpen if you've got a guy, let's say, throwing a no-hitter, perfect game, something like that. Let me throw some sort of off-the-wall questions at you, Alden, as we entertain ways to entertain ourselves this time of year. So who on that staff is going to be a no-hit, perfect game kind of guy this year?
Well, I'll tell you this much, Dave. Every time I'm not covering a game and Garrett Richards is starting, I'm nervous, especially if it's a home game. Because if it's a no-hitter and it's kind of in the sixth or seventh inning, I'm kind of expected to go to the ballpark to help out because a no-hitter is still a really big deal. Every time Garrett Richards is on the mound, I don't feel like I can go to the beach. How about that, Dave? Garrett Richards,
I like it.
Garrett Richards is a no-hitter in waiting. I mean, because for obvious reasons. He throws 98-mile-an-hour fastball, he's got a wipeout slider, and he's got a ridiculous curveball. And, I mean, he could just cut through a lineup so easily when his stuff is right. Everybody on the Angels expects Garrett Richards to throw a no-hitter someday. He's come close a couple of times. He's got the stuff to do it. He's the guy that I would pick without a doubt.
That's just a great – the greatest way of thinking about that question, right, is who
puts you on pins and needles on that day off. Different. That's the way I see it.
yeah. All right, who's maybe one of the first guys off the bench this year who you could see taking over an everyday starting job?
Well, it depends, Dave, on whether or not they get that everyday left fielder. I still feel like they try to. I still feel like they're going to eventually get. I still feel like if everybody stays healthy, they're eventually at some point, whether it's before opening day or before the trade deadline, they're going to use one of their starting pitchers to get an everyday bat in that field. But so if that happens, Daniel Nava would obviously be the guy who you could see getting a lot of playing time, especially against righties. He could he would maybe spell C.J. Cron against some tough righties sometimes, because he's a switch hitter who's hit righties really well his entire career. And also, but right now, he's slated to kind of get everyday playing time in left field. Other than Daniel Nava, I think Cliff Pennington is a guy that could get a decent amount of playing time. He's a utility infielder that they signed to a two-year deal pretty early in the offseason. And, you know, I think he comes in as a guy who's going to play late in games. If Giovatella remains the starting second baseman, I expect Cliff Pennington to play second base when they're leading by two or three runs late in the game, or maybe one run. And, you know, if Giovatella is struggling or if they're looking for other options at second base, I think Cliff Pennington could kind of slide into that role and kind of get some starts there as well.
B-Tags, heading into spring training now. It's right around the corner. News at this time of year sometimes could be a little slow in the coming. So let's switch things up just a little bit. I want to ask you some questions that maybe give us some insight into some personality of this team, but maybe it tells us a lot more about you than it tells us about this team. So I'll start with, you know, kind of some predictions for things that may or may not happen. Like, who on that pitching staff, and I think I know where you're going to go with this, if you had to predict a guy to throw a no-hitter or a perfect game, who might that be on the staff?
Well, yeah, I think you know where I'm going to go. I think it would it'd be Dallas Keuchel. I mean, he's the Cy Young winner. He's a guy that works quick. He certainly wouldn't need a lot of pitches to get through a no-hitter or perfect game. He's a guy that has a good defense behind him, especially up the middle on the infield with Correa and then a Gold Glove winner and Altuve. So he's done just about everything else so far in his career, and especially in the last couple of years since breaking through. But, you know, Mike Fiers has done it already. So, you know, they already have a guy in the rotation that has one under his belt. But if I had to put money on a guy to do it, I'd go with the Cy Young winner. I think just about anybody would.
Are there guys in that rotation who maybe you would shy away from just because of the style of pitching or, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, McHugh, you know, he's not an overly powering, dominant guy, pitches to contact, you know, tends to give up a lot of hits but get out of some trouble. You know, I'll tell you what, you know, Lance McCullers is another guy with his stuff, as hard as he throws, you know, I think he's got no-hit potential down the road. Pfister, I wouldn't see it at this point in his career. And, you know, Fiers kind of came out of left field a little bit, but he had good stuff that night. Feldman, I wouldn't see it. But you never know. I mean, look at the guys that have thrown no-hitters. It's just kind of a weird list. You have some of the all-time greats, and then you have some guys you're wondering who the heck is that.
You know, I ran into Larry Durker the other day, actually playing a little golf, and we were talking about the idea of no hitters and perfect games. And he said somebody asked him after a game once, you know, well, when did you start thinking about maybe having that no-hit type stuff? He said, well, after the first inning. So I looked up and I said, wow, when was the last time I, you know, navigated a first inning without giving up a hit? I love the honesty. You know, most guys are like, oh, you know, I didn't even know until the eighth inning. No one was talking to me. But all right, staying with the pitchers, you know, maybe a guy this year who, just because rotations are the way they are, it's impossible really to go a full year with the same five guys. Who might be a guy you would think would lose that spot in the rotation first this year?
Well, if you look at the Astros, I mean, they have six arms, quality depth proven arms right now with the addition of Pfister. So, yeah, it's not going to be Keuchel or McHugh, I don't think. They've both had two really fine years now. I think they're set on McCullers for the near future in the rotation. And then you get the Fiers and Pfister and Feldman, the F guys. I think it'll be one of those. I'd probably have to say Feldman just because he's a little older. He's coming off in a year where he had a couple injuries. He was on the DL with a knee injury. He had the shoulder sprain, which cost him the last month of the season. Now, he did say he's going to come in spring training, you know, feeling really good and 100% and ready to compete like nothing happened. But And he's also a guy that could easily move, I think, to the bullpen if they needed that long guy, just kind of a swing guy. So he's got those two things in his corner, if you will, I'm going to call it that. You know, Pfister's another guy who's coming off injury as well. He had a little bit of the elbow problem last year, although not as severe as what Feldman's shoulder was. But I think it'll be one of those two guys of the six. If you look at the Astros now, you see six, I think, starting pitchers who, if you go with the six man rotation, you'd feel good about it. They're not going to do that. And if I had to say one of those guys wouldn't be in the rotation, I think it would be Feldman, just because a little bit of the uncertainty about his health and the fact that he could pitch in the bullpen, I think, a little easier than some of the other guys.
Hey, on the pitching side too, Brian, you know, left-handers have the reputation being a little bit different. And we're kind of going off the board a little bit further on this one. Who would be the most left-handed pitching personality on this team?
Wow, left-handed pitching personality.
Could be a right-hander, right?
Huh?
Could be a right-hander too, right? Who just has that sort of left-hander's personality.
Yeah, well, I was thinking back, as you know, a few years ago, Dave Burdack was a left-hander who was very left-handed personality. Boy, I like that now. That's hard to say. You know, somebody who's very interesting, a smart guy, and maybe he's got the Batman stuff working. He could be a little quirky at times. I think is Lance McCullers. But beyond that, these are a bunch of square pegs, I think, here we're dealing with. There's nothing wrong with that, but there's just not the – I don't see any zany or goofiness that you would tend to peg on guys that are left-handed pitchers. So, I would have to say Lance. That might be a little bit of a stretch, though.
Okay. Staying on the personality theme, it could be a pitcher, but it could be a position player. Who's the hottest head, the guy most likely to be ejected from a game?
Wow. And that's just overall out of any player?
Yeah. Obviously, we can't go with A.J. Hinch. He's going to get ejected for something. But,
yeah.
You know.
Well, I think it would be Carlos Gomez, just because we've seen that through the years. Just not so much that he's got a hot head. It's just the way he plays the game. And, you know, he has the antics to go with it. And he has a lot of fun out there. He's a guy, he's on your team, you like it. If he's not on your team, you hate it. And, you know, we even saw last year where the Yankees got all bent out of shape about some of Gomez's antics, and there ended up being, you know, some benches clearing a little bit, if I remember right. But I think he's a guy that just gets under people's skin, and I think people would be willing to confront him a little bit, like we saw with, you know, Brian McCann with the Braves a few years ago when he confronted him at home plate. And, I don't think he'd be an instigator, but I think some other guys might get in his face and because of what he does, and then, you know, they end up both getting ejected. But he's just a big personality, plays fiery, plays hard, you know, lets his emotions fly out there. So I'll definitely have to say Go-Go.
Yeah. That one makes plenty of sense. All right, on the other end of the spectrum, I don't know, sort of the other end of the spectrum, the guy who maybe takes himself the least seriously, who might go with walk up music like by Justin Bieber or something like that.
I'm thinking maybe Colin McHugh for this. If you've been around Colin, if you saw him walking the streets, probably the last thing you would guess is, you know, he was a baseball player, just a very ordinary guy, and with a good sense of humor, I think he would get a kick out of something like that. I could see him doing something like that just to have a little laugh or get a kick out of it. Some guys are so entrenched into their music, and it's such a big part of the routine. They're afraid to stray from what we know. I mean, closers have to have the head banging, walk up music, and guys have different things, but it'd be cool for some guy to come to the plate with Air Supply or Justin Bieber or something like that. And if it's Colin McHugh, I wouldn't be too surprised.
Jane, it's kind of like the calm before the storm now, right? I mean, the off season has been busy, but it's just sort of that time of year where we just, I don't know, it seems like we sit back and we wait for this last week or so to pass.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, you look around the league, and even though there's quite a few players left on the board, I feel like most teams, you know, their rosters have really taken shape to, you know, how they want them to be, going into spring training. So it really is just now, you know, you're seeing a sprinkling of some minor league signings, some minor moves, but nothing really big. And it seems, you know, as far as the A's camp goes, that, you know, they're pretty set with their roster going into camp, aside from, you know, maybe another minor move or two themselves.
Well, with that being said, then, you know, it seems like a good time to evaluate this roster and all the important factors that maybe don't, you know, aren't so obvious on the stat sheet. Like, as an example, who in this group might be the first to get ejected from a game this year?
Starting with the hard-hitting one. you know what? It's pretty natural, I think, when you think of ejections, you think of the emotional, maybe temperamental guys on the team. And the first one that comes to mind is probably Danny Valencia. Very emotional player. You know, and of course that can be a good thing and sometimes maybe not so much. I believe he has been ejected in the past, so it wouldn't be the first time. But looking, you know, at the roster, a lot of young, even keel guys on the team. And Danny has been around a while, and I would probably put say he would be the first to be ejected.
Okay. All right. So other end of that spectrum then, Jane. The most lighthearted, if you will, the least likely to take himself too seriously, the guy who might walk up to the plate to Justin Bieber.
you know, there's quite a few guys on the team that might do that, but I would say that, I mean, the obvious answer is Josh Reddick, just because, you know, he's been known for having some goofy walk-up music in the past. He's used Careless Whisper from time to time. So I would probably say him, and if not him, maybe during interleague play, one of those young pitchers. I could maybe see them doing that too.
Interesting. Now you say a lot of guys. Are there a handful of others? I was thinking, I don't know.
I would say it's such a young clubhouse, and they do like to have fun. They're a little goofy. I don't know that I would put it past Jesse Hahn or Kendall Graveman, maybe even Sonny. He tends to be kind of quietly goofy. I know, you know, maybe he's seen by some fans as kind of quiet and shy, but Sonny's actually one of the goofiest people in that clubhouse. And although I think he likes his classic music too, and I think that's what he used last year, I don't know that he would be against using Justin Bieber.
Okay. All right. I was even wondering, like, Stephen Vogt, somebody like that. I mean, he's so awful.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I wouldn't put it past him either, but I think he's maybe past that stage in his life and his career. He's a little older.
Okay. All right, so let's go, you know, off the bench. And so many teams now use players so well, right? They go deep onto the bench every day. But who's a guy who we figure to pretty much start on the bench who might emerge, might take that everyday starting job in a lineup at some point? Who would be the first to do that?
Yeah, I would say the guy that comes to mind immediately is Jake Smolinski. We saw him a little bit last year, flash some power, and he's always been a guy considered around baseball, just kind of, you know, ready to break out. And I think he could do that with the A's. You know, the A's have been known in the past to find those hidden treasures. You know, they did it with Brandon Moss. I could see something similar happening with Smolinski or, you know, another guy that profiles in the same way is Andrew Lambeau. And both guys will get a chance to win a spot, you know, as a backup outfielder coming out of camp. And then one's probably going to start in AAA. I see Smolinski having the upper hand just because the A's have already seen him a little bit more. They know what he's capable of. And although I don't see maybe an everyday role for him just because the A's don't even hand out a lot of those. They have so many platoons working, especially in left field where Smolinski would play. You know, if something were to happen to Reddick in right field, you know, I could see him being a fill-in option. So I would definitely say him. They like, you know, his hitting abilities, the power potential that's there. So I think they're going to, you know, try to give him a shot here in camp.
Okay. All right. Now, I like that. It's always a fun angle to think about that guy who might emerge, guy might turn some heads, that sort of thing. And now I'm going to ask you to be sort of a grim reaper. And in fairness, everyone can acknowledge that the A's and 29 other teams aren't going to go the full season with a five-man rotation and only those five guys. There are going to be some changes to the rotation. Who's the first to lose a spot in the A's rotation?
You know, it's a little difficult to say with the A's just because we don't even know who's going to make the rotation behind Sonny. Rich Hill, of course, will probably be in there right behind Sonny. They like that veteran presence. And, you know, there's so many young guys that are going to be filling in those final three spots. So I could see a lot of movement in the back end of the rotation. But I'm going to be specific, I'll probably have to go with Rich Hill. He's a guy, you know, I think everyone wants to root for, has just a great story, spent part of last year in independent ball, signed late in the season with Boston, and, you know, only made four starts and ended up making $6 million with the A's this year. Then now those four starts, he was incredible. And the A's have always put a lot of emphasis on how guys finish the season. They're hopeful that he can, you know, last a full season in the rotation, but he hasn't started regularly since 2009. So, you know, he's also 35. Now he has the experience, but I don't know that I see him going the distance, and I don't know if he loses his spot because of injury. Now we hope not, or because of performance, but I will be the Grim Reaper and say probably him.